A elegir.
Alright, I'm listening for the music. Alright, here we go. It's a 1, 2, 3. And welcome everyone to the Only D and Fish Show. I am Rodney Fish. I go by Fish. Joined, of course, by the man extraordinaire, Mr. Only D. Before we get started, I want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening tonight. Thank you for tuning in to ntxgame.com. Make sure you go back to iTunes to download the show. Also, you can get it on iHeartRadio as well, too. And today is a special, special show because we're coming to you live from, I guess, really three different locations. Of course, we always bring our sports opinions from the south side of the Trinity River. But right now, I am in Boston, Massachusetts doing the show. And Omi, the man whose opinions are always respected, always controversial, but always entertaining, is live in what could be Championship City in Denver, Colorado. Omi D, how are you, sir?
Looking like it's going to be Championship City in Denver, Colorado. I'm feeling mile high with my entire Denver Broncos squad. Look, man, the most awesome place ever to be for that game. I was in a sea of orange. I mean, whenever we're ready to talk about it, Fish, you just let me know. Yeah, I've got a story all the way from the airport.
We're going to talk about that. We got NFL talk coming up. We also have some NBA talk as well. We'll talk a little college football news in Florida State. And before we get into the NFL talk, let's start with the NBA, because if you remember the last show we had last week, we started out the show with the story of the blowout the Warriors put on the Cleveland Cavaliers and how Cleveland looked like they were a mess. And we didn't know if Cleveland could beat the Warriors again, and how Steph Curry told everybody how the locker room still had the smell of champagne from the championship win. But well, since that particular game, a lot has happened in the NBA, Omi D. Number one, the Warriors continue to blow people out. They've, in the last week since we've been off the air, they've beat not only the Cleveland Cavaliers by 30-plus, they've also beat the Chicago Bulls by 30-plus. And then last night, they beat the San Antonio Spurs 120-90. I mean,
that's
the top teams in the league that they've all beaten by 30-plus points. To me, this is really about, this has got to be about the dominance of the Warriors. And how can a team that was so good last year come back better this year? How does that happen?
So, I'm going to tell you how it happens. Great upper-level management, able to make great deals and keep people in the same positions they were in, especially when you're talking about the starters and the role players of that team. I mean, you got a great system, the head coach. Hell, Luke Walton came in, did a decent job. You just got to give credit where credit is due. Now, on the floor, I'm going to give Steph credit, the rest of the guys that do – they're handling that. But there's got to be some good upper office management stuff, putting some deals together, the wheel and deal, especially after these guys won a championship last year, to keep them together and not get them to go off for the money, maybe.
Right.
So,
I think you're right, because if you look at the way the squad's really put together, it's almost like they have two starting fives. You know, they have so many people coming off the bench. They're doing great work for them. If you look at the stat line from last night, of course, Steph Curry had 37 points, not to be outdone. But his if you look at the bench play, you got 12 from Maurice Space, 13 from Brandon Rush. You got 13 from Sean Livingston, who's having a great season as a sixth man. And of course, Iguodala is the NBA Finals MVP. He comes off the bench. So that squad, what they've done is really miraculous. And I hear a lot of people talking in the NBA community, some of the guys that I talk with, about how, you know, this whole Warriors thing is going to make the season seem very, very boring because they're waxing everybody that they play. But to me, it makes it even more exciting because this team legitimately now, I can't even speak right now, could be as good as that Chicago Bulls team that won 72 games. Because honestly, what team could really beat them? The Mavericks beat them, but without Steph Curry. They've only lost three games. I mean, they could be one of the best teams of all time.
So which is ironic. I was talking about this with a guy today. And Golden State has how many losses?
They only have three.
There are three. Two to the Bucks and one to the Mavs, right?
Right.
Okay, that's what I thought. Just had to check myself. Because you know how when people start to try to argue with you on sports, you're like, nah, bruh. I got my opinions from south of the Trinity River. They've lost three games. Two to the Bucks, one to the Mavs. Exactly what I thought. So, yeah. But, sorry, I digress, just in case somebody's listening right now. I wanted them to let them know that I put them on blast on international radio. To all of our wonderful listening fans and sponsors and partners out there, we appreciate it. I'm having a great time in Denver. Just want to throw that in there.
You know what? Let me ask you this question, though, because there is some talk about this game because, you know, San Antonio Spurs, of course, are hanging in there. They're one of the only teams that could actually get that number one seed from the Golden State Warriors. But before the game, you know, Greg Popovich announced that Tim Duncan was not going to play. So there's a school of thought out there that says, well, he knew this was coming. He knew that his team was going to get blown out, so why play Duncan? The other thing I want to point out, though, that's interesting to me is if we can take the time machine back, not last year, but the year before when the Spurs wanted their revenge against LeBron James and after they beat them in the finals, when they were on a mission to go back to the finals to beat LeBron, Popovich did the same exact thing. He set Duncan, he set Ginobili, he set Parker the entire season when they played the Miami Heat because he didn't want to show his cards. He wanted to see how they would play him. And the Heat, you know, drilled him in a lot of those games because they didn't have the stars in there. So there's a school of thought that says the great coach that Popovich is, he set Tim Duncan because, okay, if they lose, they don't have Tim Duncan. So there's a psychological effect to that. If the Spurs win, they won without Tim Duncan. So they could be an edge there. Do you buy into that school of thought of Popovich has just got this grand scheme of things that by sitting Duncan, he's really setting the Warriors up for a playoff victory?
Now, I can believe that as a school of thought. If it's been validated that Pop did that last season, a couple seasons ago with Miami, I can see that because right now, let's just be honest with you, if the Spurs were in the East, we'd be talking about them facing off against the Warriors this year. But
right,
I don't think any of it really matters. That team is playing on a level that's Cam Newton-ish, you know. Steph Curry is healthy right now. The ankle looks good. I think the calf isn't bothering him. And what I saw last night, bro, and it's a scary thing psychologically. Have you noticed every game that they blow somebody out by 30, he's having the time of his life? Like, yeah. They're not even angry. Like, they struggle more. They were more distraught against Milwaukee than they were against San Antonio last night.
Right.
So there was having fun out there.
You know, he had 37 points in only 28 minutes last night. I mean, how do you stop that? I think hands down, he's of course the number one person for an MVP right now to me, and he's taking the league all by storm. He is the biggest star of the league right now. 37 points in 28 minutes is hard to stop. But, you know, the other thing I want to ask you, too, on the Spurs real quick. Last night, we got to see if and I think Pop did this on purpose. I think one of the reasons to me that he took Duncan out the game is because he wanted to put a lot more on the other guys. So you look who started last night, LaMarcus Aldridge, Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, David West, and Tony Parker. Parker only had 5 points. LaMarcus Aldridge only had 5 points. Danny Green only had 3 points. All these guys played 20-plus minutes. So for you to bring in LaMarcus Aldridge and pay him $8 million a year, make him the big max guy, the new guy with all the money, he only gives you 5 points in a big, big, big game. Tony Parker only gives you 5 points in a big game. Danny Green, who we know can shoot the three, good enough to score more than 3 points in the game. I think part of this was probably putting pressure on them to say, you know what? You guys are going to be this new team going forward. What are you going to do? LaMarcus Aldridge, what are you going to do? Because if you notice, in some of those big games for Portland, when LaMarcus was there, a big knock on him was the fact that during these big games, he wouldn't always show up for the big game. And that was the biggest game of the year so far. And they only have 5 points in 25 minutes is not going to cut if you're going to be a spur for the next 5 or 6 years.
You know, I kind of like that thought. But, you know, Popovich is not the kind of coach that, I mean, one loss against a quality team like that, it's like losing a pawn on a chessboard for him. So he might be doing something of that nature. But it's a good point. But, like, Tim Duncan is not going to be with the Spurs forever. Like, you got to start seeing what you have. And I mean, it's the perfect time to lose a game. If you're going to lose a game, you know, do it now. You know, the media market is not hyping up San Antonio as much as they're hyping up Golden State to pull off such a miraculous thing as we look at it in that Bulls season. But for a while, they were in there just as well. But that team is a non-marketed team. Like, they just don't talk about the San Antonio Spurs when it comes to stuff like basketball. You know, they just are not a marketable team. And I think that's the biggest thing that they have going for them right now is Steph Curry and those guys are so marketable. You know,
yeah.
But they're good, bro. You can't deny it. Like, the dude shoots 100 three-pointers every day after practice. That's after practice. That's not part of the practice.
I've seen him. Oh, yes.
Yeah. That's nothing that he does. I don't see very many other NBA players that are actually getting out there and, number one, putting that kind of effort into it, you know, extra effort. Bro, that guy, he's lights out. And that team is lights out, bro. Just everybody. You look for someone to perform, Green, Iguodala, you know, Splash Brother number one, Splash Brother number two. There's always five guys, and one of them can step up and light it up at any point. And that's not what San Antonio has. And that was a good, thinking about what you said, like, that was a good lesson for them, a good lesson for Popovich to see what he has. And knowing, like I said, talking about upper management level, you know, they can start looking and seeing what they can start picking up next year in the draft, where they have the weaknesses.
Yeah. Right.
I don't think in a 7-game series, even in a 5-game series, I don't think San Antonio stands a chance. I wouldn't bet on
it. That's big. I mean, we originally thought that San Antonio may be the one team that could beat them, and now we see that nobody can beat them. You know, that's just amazing to me what they've done on the top teams, you know, around the league. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about the connection of Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors to another team that may be considered one of the better teams of all time when we get the NFL part of the show. But before we leave the NBA part, you know, one of us that we discussed on the show last week, or part of the show last week, actually does not have a job today. And that's the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers, David Blatt, who was fired on his off day. How you get fired on your day off, Craig? I don't understand. But he got fired on his off day. He got fired on his off day. Somebody said he caught him on camera stealing boxes. Okay.
Yeah, he was stealing LeBron jersey.
Yeah. So he's no longer head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. They promote Tyronn Lue as head coach, who I always thought Lue would be the head coach. I'm surprised they didn't fire him after the finals, or didn't fire him before the season started last year when they knew LeBron was coming back. But Lue's the head coach. And this is a part I want to discuss with you, OBD, because let's try to make some sense out of this story. So the Cleveland Cavaliers have said, both in the press release and in the press conference, they have totally denied the fact that they did not speak with LeBron whatsoever before making this decision. They basically just made the decision on their own fruition, then talked to LeBron and see what LeBron thought about it. and just went ahead and made this their thing. And even LeBron has come out in his interview and said, hey, I didn't know anything about it. This is their team, their decision. Now, come on, man. I got to call BS. I got to call BS. LeBron is Cleveland, period. Not just the Cavaliers. He is the city of Cleveland. He is the state of Ohio. How do you talk to the state of Ohio of LeBron before you make a decision about who's going to be the head coach? How does that, where do they do that at?
You know where? When you hired a puppet in the first damn place, they didn't really care. Like, they gave that man a chance. You know, they gave you a chance with an all-star NBA player like LeBron James. But then let's just be real about the situation with the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cleveland Cavaliers are not this great team, bro. They've got a LeBron James. They've got a Kyrie Irving. They've got a Kevin Love. And then they got some more role players coming in. It's three guys. And, you know, Kyrie's coming back off of injury. LeBron is said that they're a young team. And I think a lot of people are just hyped up on the fact that, like, he's LeBron. He should be able to take a team to the championship. But, I mean, shit, the Miami Heat team that he had four major role players on it at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
And their coach never got fired. But, bro, I mean, sometimes you just have to put somebody in place until you see something. Now, do I think they talked to LeBron James about firing him? Maybe not that in particular. Do I think they talked to LeBron James? No, yeah, you know, I don't. You know what? I'm gonna be optimistic. I'm gonna say that they didn't ask LeBron if he wanted the coach fired. I'm gonna say what they did do is they probably asked him how does he feel about the coach and what's going on, because, you know, you look at some things that transpired during the season, you know, LeBron sitting in the coach's chair, LeBron sitting down talking to Tyron more than he talked to the head coach. And so, you know, I am a big fan of LeBron James. I think he's a classy individual. I don't think that he would do or would be part of a scandal of some sort or a whoop-de-doo to get the coach fired. But, I don't think he really had anything directly to do with it. I think it was one of those, they made a decision, which is awkward because you're leading the East, but you also have to remember they're fading in the East as well. Toronto is starting to catch back up with them.
But I'm asking you this question. So let's just say you're the head coach of a basketball team, okay? Your first year with the team, you go to the NBA Finals. And you're missing two of your key starters. Two of your big three are out. But you still take it to six games, okay? You lose. You come back. You're 30-11 in the East. 30-11, number one in the East. And you get fired. I mean, does that make sense? Does that make sense to fire a coach that has accomplished as much as he has? I mean, I take the approach of Rick Carlisle when he said, because Carlisle, of course, is the president of the Coaches Association for the NBA. He says it makes the whole league look bad when a guy gets fired for doing his job well. Doesn't make any sense. You know, it just does not make any sense. So it tells me there had to be something else, you know, and I don't know what the something else is. I will tell you this. I talked to a guy that does cover the Cleveland Cavaliers on a daily basis. And he told me a story about how one day, I guess, it used to be that LeBron and Kyrie Irving would want to shoot together after the game. So they're on a road somewhere, and they go back out on the court and start shooting the basketball. And all the guys are waiting on the bus, like the players, the coaches, the training staff. Everybody's waiting on the bus. They're waiting on the bus for an hour, waiting on these guys to get off the court. And you know who went and got them off the court? It wasn't David Blatt. It was Tyronn Lue. Lue got out and got in their face and got him off the court. You've heard the stories reported on all the major media outlets about how Lue would be the only one to call LeBron out on tape when he was in the wrong position. David Blatt would blame somebody else. But Lue would get in his face and call LeBron out when he was doing the wrong thing.
Well,
Here's
my question. What NBA team did David Blatt play for?
Well, he didn't. He coached internationally, you know.
Okay.
He's so an international coach. He's one of the winningest head coaches in international basketball of all time. I mean, he's going to go to the Basketball Hall of Fame based on just what he's done overseas.
Yeah, that's overseas. Now, how many NBA teams has he played? See, Tyronn Lue is a player's coach. All right? You got to think, a lot of these guys are coming in to the league, and a lot of them want the player coach. They want the player coach because the player coach, especially one that's been to championships, can relate, you know? And, of course, I understand this guy is winning his coach in international basketball. But, you know, I don't think, I'm just going to be real with you. Me as a person, like, that doesn't impress me. Like, that's international basketball. How many gold medals has the international teams won from America in the Olympics? Zero. All right? So
zero.
But I really, yeah, zero. So here, it's not the same like in soccer. Like, you get a great soccer coach from Europe over here, and you're just like, oh, my gosh, he's awesome because the game translates that way. European football is way better than American football right now on a scale of soccer. But it's not the same way in basketball. America has dominated basketball in almost every international competition, minus a couple that I've seen. But that's just our thing, bro. That's our sport. So I think his resume is not enough to impress the players. And coaching is not just about making people win. Because just because these guys step on the court and he's there, they're not winning because he wants them to win. They're probably winning because they want to win.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you got a team, like you said, if you got a LeBron, like, you don't have to fucking coach LeBron. I said that the other week. You don't coach players like LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant. You guide them. You give them basketball knowledge. You give them wisdom. You point things out. You call them out when they're wrong, you know, but you don't, it's not the same as some people might see coaching as. And like I said, I just don't see David Blatt as the kind of person that can issue guidance from an NBA Finals perspective. I mean, they got to the playoffs last year, bro, but how many times have you seen a coach take over a team, Barry Switzer, and win a championship, and that'd be the end of it?
Right.
So
right.
Same
you're right.
Thing.
I mean, you're right about that. And again, I'm not saying Blatt is a better coach than Tyronn Lue. My only point, what I was trying to make, was that, A, LeBron made this choice. Okay, he was a part of the decision. And B, even with Tyronn Lue, I think it'd be better for LeBron if LeBron listens to him. But at the same time, I still don't see them beating, you know, the Warriors. I mean, I think we both agree on that. I still don't think they'll. I don't know. I think the next shoe to drop on me, D, to be honest with you, is they will be trading Kevin Love. I know we talked about
that
last week. I mean, I think that's the next thing to happen before the trade deadline, which is right around the All-Star break. They will be trading Kevin Love. I think that's
you can get some good pieces.
Yeah, you can get some good pieces. Really good pieces.
And that's what they need.
That's what they need. You're right. That's exactly what they need. Well, that's enough a little bit of NBA. We got a lot more NBA, of course, that we could talk about, but we got bigger issues to talk about. We got to get into the NFL stuff. But before that, Mr. Tailgate said, I have a quick college football opinion question I need to get from you, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that, you know, college football season is over, but there's a story that we had discussed several months ago about one.
Mm-hmm.
James Winston, and I don't know if you saw the story that came out. I think I forwarded it to you today about how Florida State is not going to pay the accuser that accused James Winston of a sexual assault $950,000, and they're justifying that because they are saying that she's only going to get $250,000 of that $950,000. The rest of it's going towards her legal costs and court fees. So they're doing this because they don't want to go to trial and tied up in court and have to spend more money. A lot of people take settlements as some type of an admission of guilt. And I think Florida State's the only thing they're really guilty of is not taking this serious enough. I mean, part of the money they have to spend, they're also going to have to implement some type of sexual harassment training for all the individuals at Florida State, the football team, the athletic department. Everyone's got to participate in that. And there's still a civil trial that's going on between the young lady and Jameis Winston, who has yet to be settled. Now, his lawyers have come out and said, basically, you know, just because the Florida State paid her doesn't mean that we're going to settle. We're going to go to court. We're going to fight this. We're going to get her under oath and see if she tells the truth under oath. But let me ask you this. Now that Florida State's kind of stepped out of it, they paid this money off. I mean, doesn't that still make this seem like something happened that shouldn't have happened that particular night? I mean, doesn't that kind of tarnish Winston a little bit more now that Florida State has decided, hey, we're going to pay this money and admit that we were at fault in doing something?
Well, I can see Florida State not paying, well, paying the young lady to get her to go away. I'm going to say it like that. Now, a lot of people don't like that. A lot of people say, well, they should admit that they were guilty, or he was guilty. You know, but the thing about it is, let's just be honest. And I'm always looking at both sides of a coin, because if you don't show me the other side, I don't know that it's real. Like, how can we guarantee, and I'm not saying this young lady is any kind of troublemaker or anything, but I'm just saying, how can we guarantee that this happened exactly like she said it happened? College football has been around for so long. How many of these girls have gone to different places, gone to different parties, slept with people, and then let's just be honest with you, in the days of social media nowadays, pictures are going to go places quickly. And so some of these girls end up getting embarrassed because, let's be honest with you, these are college kids. And we talked about that when we talked about that thing. These are kids. They're 19, they're 20, 21. Like, they got social media and all kinds of distractions, bro. Like, you know, we had all kind of crazy stuff going on when we were in our 20s. We just were fortunate that, you know, MySpace didn't let you post from a mobile device. Because, you know, you had to go scan a picture and then put it up on MySpace pretty much to get it up. And then you got to explain to your mama why you're trying to scan naked pictures of a girl, because a scanner costs like $185.
Right. It's before they came with printers, you know. It was separate devices for those that were young enough to, those that were too young to understand that.
Yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Yeah. You had to go to Best Buy and buy you a scanner and a printer. Like, there used to be things called offices where people would go and there'd be 15 different pieces of office equipment. But yeah, bro, it was like, Florida State is a business. Jameis Winston is in the NBA now, NFL now. So they don't have to represent him. And just like with Reggie Bush, you know, the college is going to have to eat some of it, because they're going to have to do classes and sensitivity training and all kinds of stuff that they're going to have to pay for. And Jameis Winston is pretty much still going to be seen as a pretty good alumni for them, which, I mean, he is, bro. You cannot, in the court of law, he's not been proven guilty in a court of law right now.
I want to make this quick. I know we talk sports, but out of time, we do talk some social issues. I'm going to have a quick kind of social commentary on this, because I think it needs to be said to all my young brothers out there that listen, okay? The stat says 1 out of 3 women in college are victims of sexual assault. 1 out of 3. And she admits that she went to the club that night. She admits that she got drunk. She admits that she went home with him and his friends, along with other people. Okay? And that has been clarified as some form of sexual assault. Now, in college, it happens all the time. You go to the club, you buy a woman a drink. She may have already had too many drinks. You buy her another drink. You take her home. Things happen. Okay? That, in today's day and age, is viewed as sexual assault. I'd be mad to tell my daughters that my oldest daughter, who is 16, I had to tell her anytime that someone gives you a drink, I want you to keep drinking, and you get drunk when you get in college. Not when you're 16, when you get in college, and you go home and you do stuff, and then you wake up and you don't realize what just happened. In some instances, that's considered sexual assault in today's day and age. So I want to tell the young brothers that are listening out there, you need to understand what it is, first of all. Okay, it's not like when we were younger and it was just a different day and time. That is considered sexual assault now, to get somebody drunk and take them home. So I just want the young brothers out there listening to know that and understand that, so you can stay out of this kind of trouble.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a dangerous game, man. Like, cats are playing with their lives. They think it's cool. You know, these frat boys, you know, they get a chick drunk. They do this, they do that. But, bro, it's a serious thing now. You know, that's damaging for people. And it's a sad statistic that 1 out of 3 women is sexually assaulted in college, bro. That's supposed to be the best time of your life. But, you know,
right.
I went to college. I was out there living it up, you know. But it's a sad thing that a man feels the urge. And I was talking about this with some coworkers today. Like, I just can't. In situations where I'm with a woman and she's possibly had too much, and she's trying to come on to me, I'm not going to do it. I just don't feel right about doing that. I just feel wrong.
That's why I wanted to bring it up, because I want people to understand that there is a difference, okay? There is a big difference. All right, on a more much more happier note, let's jump to a little bit more of something that's very, very near and dear to you, Omi D. And that is the AFC Championship game that happened this Sunday between the Patriots and the Broncos, and how the Broncos pull off the win 20-18 on the final seconds of the game. And I know you got a great story about this, so the floor is yours, sir.
Well, let's start off by saying congratulations to the Denver Broncos for winning the AFC Championship game. I know there are a lot of people out there that did not think that we were going to be able to topple the Patriots, the guys on ESPN. They all picked against us, but we believed. We believed there was something special about this one. Because you know what was special about this one? I was in the city of Denver for this game. And I'm telling you, from the moment I got into the airport, And busted that left and went down to the terminal gate, and we were the first ones there. And I just saw orange after orange after orange after orange pulling up to the gate with us. And I'm like, this is going to be the best flight ever, right? So I'm on the plane. Of course, they're like, Broncos this. And they're like, woo! They're like, Broncos that. They're like, woo! And so there's a couple of people on the plane that were like Patriots fans. I was like, shouldn't Patriots fans be getting at the end of the line, get on this flight? Like, they're pretty crappy. So,
yeah,
get to Denver, get off the airplane, and it's automatic orange rush. It's orange thunder. I see orange everywhere. People in the airport wearing orange. Orange Bronco stuff everywhere. So, you get on the train, Demaryius Thomas is giving the safety speech. You know, I'm like, what are you doing here? You got a game to win. It's like about to start right now. So we get to the hotel, you know, check in. I go meet up with my homie. One of my homies is up here from high school. Shout out to my homie Paul. So I go watch the game with some of his friends over there, man. So I catch an Uber from the south side of Denver to the north side. So we go right by the stadium as the second touchdown is going. He makes the second touchdown. All the fireworks go off. The flames are shooting out. I'm like, oh, my God! I'm not even in the game, and this is so awesome! And so, you know, I'm in the party with Broncos fans, bro. You know that the last 2 minutes of the game, anytime the Patriots, anytime Tom Brady is in a game and there's 2 minutes left, there's too much time. If there's a minute and 23 seconds, that's too much time, bro. Tom Brady was putting them in the place that they needed to be to win that game, and they just weren't coming through for him. Plain and simple, their defense was stout. Defense was stout, man, and it was just so awesome to be in a room, bro, where everybody was cheering, and then I went downtown, everybody was getting drunk, I went to Target, everybody was like, rock and roll! Because, of course, you know, if you checked out the Twitter or even on my Instagram, OnlyD Online, I was decked out in orange. Decked out. Yeah. It was people at the party that were like, I feel bad. You just got off a plane from Texas and you have on more Broncos stuff than I do. Hey, I'm a real fan. But it was the most awesome game, bro. I couldn't have asked for a better end to a NFL season. Being a Broncos fan, to be in the city, the city's electric, bro. They got the AFC championship things everywhere. They've got announcements, you know, on the little screen where you like you're driving down the highway and there's a road closure that says Broncos AFC championships on them all over the city. It's, bro, they have like a song that they made, like a, it's amazing, bro. It's amazing. It's just where I want it to be. So anyway, that's my personal opinion about it. But you're in Boston, so I'm pretty sure you're in an interesting conversation,
oh,
too.
Oh, man. You know what? I got in tonight, so I haven't heard kind of all of it just yet. But I'm sure a lot of it's coming. So I just haven't heard it all yet, but I know it's coming. I know for a fact it's coming. You know, but, you know, I want to talk a little bit more about the game itself, because I want to get from you as a Denver Bronco fan and someone that's watched this team all season and then going to this game with the Patriots. We knew it was going to be a lot made about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and now Peyton has the 3-2 record over Brady in the playoffs and the way they won the game. So I want to find out from you, first of all, what did you think about Peyton's performance in the game?
The old man has been playing the way the old man has to play. He doesn't have the physical skill that he used to have, so he's having to play his best of his ability. And he's just really lucky, and it's just honest, bro. He's really lucky he's got a pretty good receiving core out there, because his ability or inability to throw the ball, to throw the deep ball, is really putting the Broncos at a disadvantage when it comes to run game. And if you're going to be able to do two things, you're going to need to run and you're going to need to be able to throw the ball down the field. Can't. You really, to me, they kind of go hand in hand. If they're not afraid for you to throw the ball down the field, then they're always going to be pressing up to be able to stop the run. So all your short routes, as you know, Peyton throws 10 to 12 yards, that's about it. Free safeties can press up. Corners can press up.
You're right.
Because the ball, you're not going for it. I'm not going to get beat on a deep route. Peyton Manning threw one deep ball, and it really wasn't deep. It went like 20 yards down the field, but it went like 100 yards up in the air. So, you know, it was – I'm not saying that Brock Osweiler should have been in the game. All I'm saying is it's a wise move, as Jason Garrett says, to put the player in the game that gives us the best chance to win. That's all you can do. And that's what he did.
Well,
old man playing smart with his life.
You've always said that you've got a certain leash length for Peyton Manning. Every playoff game that we've talked about leading into it, you've got this kind of like, if he does this, this, and this, put Osweiler in, you know. Even in the game against Pittsburgh, we talked about how, you know, certain parts of that game you feel like, hey, man, it might be time to make a change here. So that's why I want to get your opinion on that. I also want to talk a little bit about this Broncos defense who hit Brady 23 times, led by DeSoto's own, straight from the south side of the Trinity River, Mr. Von Miller. Shout out to Von, man.
Make sure we tag him in this show, because he's doing big things. Shout out to Von. Great game, bro. It was so exciting. It was just like, he turned up in the fourth quarter. Like, he knew it was that moment, and he was constantly getting in Tom Brady's face. Big shout out to DeMarcus Ware as well, because Ware was putting some pressure on him, man. They were really getting in Tom Brady's ass. Excuse me. They were really getting on to Tom Brady. And, just my fans.
Speak from the heart, brother.
My fans,
from the heart.
Straight from the heart, yeah. So, they were really getting on to Tom Brady, man, but that pressure looked so good. But you know what? Tom Brady is not the quarterback that Cam Newton is. And love my Broncos to death, bro. And I feel like they can pull it off because that's the fan in me. And if somebody gives me their money to bet, I bet on the Broncos. But if I had to bet my money, and I say had, like forced by the mafia with a gun, I'd probably bet on Cam Newton and their defense. Because they're just a better defense than me.
Well, let's talk about the whooping that Cam and Carolina put on Arizona. I mean, the defense, like you said, was all over Carson Palmer. Gave no time. Cam was extraordinary. Threw for 2 touchdowns. Ran for 2 more. I mean, he was dabbing all night. He was giving balls away all night. I mean, they beat him really, really bad, man. You know what the thing is about Cam is, here's the thing I fear on me, D. As good as he is, has been, I just feel like he's not going to get credit for this season like he really should. I mean, let's be honest. There's only been 2 teams that made it to the Super Bowl with a better record than the Carolina Panthers. That was the Patriots where they went undefeated, and that was the 72 Dolphins who finished the only undefeated season and won a Super Bowl in NFL. So by those standards, okay, they would be the 3rd best team in NFL history by those standards alone. Because you look at that 85 Bears team who had 1 loss, they didn't play 17 games, they only played 15 games. So I don't think they're going to get the just due that they deserve. You know, we talked about, you know, Carolina being a great team, and really Golden State being a great team, and they're not getting the credit they deserve of being a team that could be better than that Jordan team. This Panthers team should get some credit as one of the greatest teams that we have ever seen. I mean, because their record alone, their dominance alone, you know, other than that game against Atlanta, against a divisional opponent, they dominated every team they played. They went on the road and dominated. They dominated at home. And Cam has performed extraordinary. So that's something I very fear, because I think the NFL analysts or whoever they are not going to give this team the just credit that they deserve. I really don't.
I can see that. It's hard to give a team credit because, of course, everybody wants to give the Patriots the credit. Let's just be real about it. Everybody wants to give the credit to Tom Brady. Everybody wants the Patriots to be that team. And, you know, even when Seattle won, you know, did Seattle get big credit once they won? No, they came back the next season. Seattle was the champion, but they were still talking about Tom Brady and them. You know, it's a thing of respect, bro, and they won't get it because you know why? They're an exciting team to watch. Just like that team, College UT had with Vince Young. They didn't get a lot of credit because they're a team, but for some odd reason, people hate teams that are exciting. Have you noticed that? People get upset because the Carolina Panthers team is entertaining. Like, bro, I'm an sports entertainer. That's my job. I'm an NFL football player, but it's a business of entertaining sports. If nobody buys our jerseys, we don't make any more money next year, right?
Right.
So, let's give the people a show. That's what they came for. They didn't come here to be bored to a game. So, you know, they love that. The fans love it, but the analysts hate it because they're the ones that just like, well, he should have just made the touchdown and handed the ball to the referee and, you know, had some class and dignity. Like,
go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, I just scored a touchdown, you know, 85 yards touchdown on some of the greatest players in the country, bro, possibly the world. And I can't celebrate? Get real. No, there's not that many people that can do my job.
Let's be honest, though. Let's really be honest, okay? They're going to vilify Cam Newton, okay? Cam Newton's going to be the villain of this matchup because it's Peyton Manning, okay? We know this may be his last game. He wants to go out on top. I mean, even throughout the season when they were undefeated and winning games, he was vilified for – he was the villain for dancing in the end zone, dabbing in the end zone. And then no one even knew about the football thing, about him giving it to kids or how much he did outside of football. Nobody even cared about that. They just didn't want him dancing. They write letters in about him dancing. They're gonna make him the villain. The quarterback position in the NFL is the most talked about. It's the biggest position in sports. It's quarterback of an NFL team. You got Cam Newton, who's young, who's black, who's gifted, who could be the only quarterback in football history that's won a junior college title, a NCAA championship, and a Super Bowl. There's history that's ever done that. And it's almost the same thing they did with Russell Wilson. It was kind of like, who is this kid? He runs too much, not a good passer. He's not going to be able to be, you know, Peyton Manning. They're going to make him a villain, just like they did with Russell Wilson. That's what's going to happen because it's Peyton Manning, Peyton's last game. I mean, you look on the sidelines of the Carolina game, who's on the sidelines? I mean, you've got Young Jeezy, Future on the sidelines of the Carolina game, right? You got Steph Curry taking shoot around in a Cam Newton jersey, you know? And I didn't know this until yesterday, but Cam Newton, he's not even the number one selling Panthers jersey. Luke Kuechly is. Kuechly is. So there's something about him being young, being black, having fun, that's going to really turn a lot of people off. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Vince Young, bro. They just hated him because you know who's on the other side? Matt Leinart. Ready, steady, no celebration, Matt Leinart, bro. Like, it's amazing. It's the fact of just the fact that they're doing too much, bro. You're doing too much, you know. But here's one thing I like about Cam, though. Although he's doing too much, he's smarter than most that have had that power. You know, look at what he's doing, doing the most. He's giving footballs away to the kids that are in the front row. Bro, how many in... I'm not trying to make this a black or white issue, but we'll talk about that because it is. There's statistics. It's numbers. I would wish they would look at all the kids. Matter of fact, SportsCenter did a clip. They went back and looked at all the kids that Cam Newton gave a football to and see what the racial ethnicity of it was. Because let's be real. Front row seats at an NFL football game? Those ain't cheap.
Yeah, you're right.
Especially to AFC championship game. Let's just get real. You know, it ain't many of us sitting in the front rows of any sports arenas. So, you know, I think people have to look at that, you know, and Cam is doing a good thing. He's very active in the community. He likes to give the kids. He loves to give the kids, you know. And that's the thing, bro. I think back to that commercial that he had with the NFL play now. And he was, that little boy, he's like, so if I eat, you know, right, and exercise 5 times a day, I can grow up and be strong just like you? He's like, yep. He said, and I can go to college and win a Heisman just like you? He said, possibly. He said, I can come to Carolina and make all your fans forget about you and take your job. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And little boy was like warming his arm up. He's like, I'm just warming up my arm. Like that, I think that is genuine Cam Newton.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they don't want to. They just, yeah. And it's just, like you said, they have to vilify somebody at all times. And he just seems to be that guy that, you know, we do have to know, you know, and we got like 3 minutes, you know, in the show. But, you know, I'm going to close with my saying on the Cam Newton issue with, you know, don't Don't let the liberal media tell you how to think and feel. To quote Dave Chappelle.
You know. But we got a whole show next week to get into this matchup between both of these two teams, man. Got a whole show. But and I know you're gonna still be in Denver for the next week's show. I expect to get a lot of the voice of the people, the voice of the Coloradans in Denver to come from you next week.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, everybody I saw today was just, you know, and Sunday has just been like, what the hell? We all turned up.
Well, I'm going to find out what's going on in Boston tomorrow, because I'm sure that's all they're going to be talking about on the radio is the Patriots. I'm for sure about that.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to call me and see how it's going down.
Yeah, that's all they're going to talk about. Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. I want to thank everyone for making this possible, man. It's the first time we're doing this kind of on-location show. And we'll make sure you guys go to ntxgame.com and go back and listen to the show, download the podcast there, or go to iTunes or iHeartRadio and download the podcast there as well, too. It's been another show, another real show. OMD, anything you want to say before we sign off?
I appreciate y'all letting me cook dinner while I was doing the show. It's been really awesome, like, doing a show for the first time. So I've been kind of cooking dinner. I got some chicken and some noodles, some pasta and some salad coming up. So, you know, OMD's over here doing the thing. Cooking it up.
We'll see y'all next week. OMD and Fishing, we out.
We out.